You're still there, Francis?
Oh, hello? Sorry, my mic was muted. Holy cow, that's embarrassing. I'm still here. When the red light is on, you cannot talk, just so you know.
Green is the color.
Hey, welcome to the Green is the Color podcast. This is episode 318. I'm your host, Francis Lord. This week, I'm joined by Gerard Suretsky and Mr. K. Keith is here. Tim Miller is away this week. We're also joined by special guest, Mr. Lowell Ulrich, the BC Lions beat writer for the Vancouver province and the man behind the Fifth Quarter blog. So welcome to everyone today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good evening.
Let's get right down to it. The game of the week, the game that we're all here for. Riders and Lions, the Riders were hoping to stop a three-game losing streak. Unfortunately, it got extended to four games with their 23-17 loss to the Lions. A few things that we were hoping we would see the end of in this game, we did, as Rider fans anyway, was the improved play of the defense, pretty much doing a better job shutting down the run. We saw more offensive production. We saw Andy Fantuz get back into the flow of things. Wes Cates had a decent game. We did see the downside of Darien, and that was the turnovers. He threw two touchdowns in this game, but three interceptions as well, and a costly fumble. We'll have to discuss special teams yet again, but the gong show continues in Saskatchewan with another punt return touchdown returned against the Riders. So, Mr. Ulrich, what do you make of these Riders? Are they playing with a lot of heart, a lot of motivation? Or is this a team that's just in a funk and desperately trying to get out of it?
Well, first of all, it's Lowell, and thanks for having me on your podcast,
sorry.
Guys. I don't look at the Riders not nearly as intensely as you folks do, and so I sort of, take the viewpoint of one who, you know, kind of drops in to have an occasional look, I suppose, as a guy who covers another team. I saw a lot of positives in what the Riders did in this game, relative to some of the other games that they played, most recently in the loss against Edmonton. Now that said, you're absolutely right. I mean, Darien can't have, the touchdown to interception ratio that he had in this game, because it's far worse than, even his touchdown to interception ratio during the year, which isn't that good. He didn't protect the ball particularly well, as you say, with the fumble. But although I have to say that's a little bit of forced pressure from the line perspective. If I'm a Saskatchewan Rough Rider fan, I'm thinking that, although this is a, painful process to lose four straight, on the brink of the playoffs, I think that the week that they have prior to that playoffs going in to play Edmonton probably is, from a Rider perspective, still enough time to sort of right the wrongs and look at this team in a way that says, all right, it hasn't been great, but, there's opportunity still to turn things around.
What do you guys think of this last week going into week 19? Do the Riders, do they go all out to try and get the win against Edmonton at home? Maybe they want to play for their fans and give them their money's worth. Or do you think it's better, despite being on a four-game losing streak, to rest some starters and just get through the week healthy?
Well, I think you have to go in and you have to try to win, because you don't want to go in the playoffs with a losing streak. And they need to get that momentum back. And if they lose to Edmonton next week, I don't see too much hope for against Calgary in the semifinal. I think it's going to be Edmonton, I think, in the semifinal, but I could be wrong. But no, they need to step it up and protect the quarterback, which they were horrendous. I didn't think they were very good protection yesterday at all. So and Darien had a bad game, but no, they have to win next week. They have to, and they got to play the starters.
So I'll open up to you guys. What do you think? What's more important, getting back on a roll, ending the losing streak, or resting some key starters?
I'd just like to hit really quick. I don't know why, Gerard, you think it's going to be Edmonton. I think we may not control our destiny, but the Lions have a really good shot at this.
I hope it's BC. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think you need the momentum going in. I mean, at this point, I think you need to play. I don't know. What do you think, Lowell?
Well, I would agree with that assessment, guys. I mean, if you're the Riders, you do not want to start the playoffs with a five-game losing streak, having also lost to the team that you must play, even if it is at Mosaic. I'm sure that the Riders aren't going to look at this and say, okay, who do we want to play in this series in the West semifinal? But clearly, the record to date would tell you that Saskatchewan has had a far better rate of success against the Lions this year and last year versus Edmonton, who is 2-4, as I understand it, with Richie Hall at the helm since he left as defensive coordinator.
Let's get back to the game a little bit here. As I had mentioned, the defense played a little bit better. They shut down Robertson here. He only had, mind you, 8 carries for 57 yards. Travis Lule was a pretty respectable 21 of 29 for 204 yards and a touchdown, no interceptions. What do you guys make of Lule? I mean, he managed the game well, didn't turn it over, came out with the win. Is he BC's guy next season?
Well, I'll kick off that one. I mean, from a BC perspective, that seems to be what, you know, this team is saying. I mean, they certainly made a rather definitive statement only 3 weeks prior when they cut their first string quarterback, Casey Printers, and basically handed the keys to Travis and said, you drive. And I think that, you know, if he shows anything during this month of October, and should it get now to November and playoff time, they are going to go into next year very comfortable with him starting to learn. You know what? It's kind of Travis Lule, and you look at Darian Durant, and you see a lot of similarities in terms of the growth. You don't, you know, maybe necessarily see a lot of similarities in terms perhaps in arm strength and, you know, pedigree. But Travis Lule, you know, is being given the requisite amount of time to grow, as the Riders did with Durant eventually before they gave him the number one job.
And he certainly looks better, eh? Like if you look at, you know, two or three games ago when he was running, it seemed like every other play, and things are, you know, he looks like he's reading the field better. He's trusting throwing to the inside a lot more than he was before. Just it looks like things are coming together. I was pretty down on him a few weeks ago, but the fellow sitting next to me in the stands, we were talking about Zabransky, and he said, you know, Zabransky, think about Lule a few weeks ago as well, and think about where he's come, that exactly what you're talking about. Once you get into that role, you need a few weeks to develop. It takes time.
Oh, yes, it does. I agree, guys. I mean, really, you need to have some, you know, you have to have a long rope, and, you know, you have to be able to, process information. And Travis is a pretty bright guy. He doesn't strike me as one who's just, you know, kind of, relied to this point in his career on you know, sheer athleticism. And, you know, he's pretty cerebral. It picks things up well. You know, it reminds people in BC, you know, and they like to make comparisons like that because it's favorable to Dave Dickinson. And there's a lot of talk in this neck of the woods that if somehow, some way, the Lions could get Dave Dickinson out of Calgary in a coaching capacity here in BC in 2011, they would have the perfect combination.
I thought Lule played with a heck of a lot of confidence yesterday, and he went back in that pocket and threw. So I hope whoever we play, they don't get that confidence yet.
He has a lot of confidence, but he isn't, you know, to the point of being stupid about it. I mean, that's the way people look at him in BC. I mean, he did take shots downfield. I mean, I think he had, you know, his receivers didn't help him out in that Rider game, I didn't think. I mean, G-Roy dropped one, Emmanuel Arsenault dropped one, but also, you know, Lule made a throw that, you know, with a bit more degree of accuracy, it's a touchdown, and the game is far more one-sided than it ended up being. But it's those kinds of things that make people in BC just kind of, you know, look back and say, well, just maybe they've got someone.
Hey, question for you, Lowell, because you're, as fans, sometimes, you know, there are things that we don't see because we're not as close to the team. Jarius Jackson, does he take on a mentorship role with Lule? Is there any kind of dynamic that way that you feel with the team?
I think it's there, but it's not quite the same, not as much as you might think. Jarius has been, he's been an interesting case study, I'll tell you this. I mean, you want him to be a number one quarterback, he'll compete for the job. He competed for the job with Buck Pierce, lost it. That was fine. You want him to be number two, he's fine with that. You want him to be a number three, he's okay with that. But more importantly, he has the respect of those around him in the locker room. And I mean, not too many quarterbacks will you see in this league who are of the third string and are also a team captain, and I think that probably tells you as much as anything. But I think he's been a quiet mentor. I don't think it's been quite tutor-like, but he certainly they do seem to work well together. I'll say that.
And what do you think about the other thing, on just moving to the other side of the ball real quick for the Lions? How important was it to get Aaron Hunt back in the lineup? Because he seemed to have a real strong leadership role.
Well, I think I think that's well identified. But I think really from what I saw in that first game, that really is all I did see. Aaron Hunt came to camp this year in fantastic shape. However, the 11 weeks away from play didn't help his physical stature whatsoever. I mean, the interception that he got, if that's what you want to call, was more of a gift from Darian, where he had that shovel pass. I mean, really, what else was
it? Horror.
I asked him about it after the game. I said, what were you doing? I mean, basically put it into my, bread basket kind of thing, and I ran with it, showing off all my moves, I think is what he said. And it's just that kind of, Aaron has that sort of infectious personality about him, and I think if you watch the game, you saw how his teammates kind of mobbed him after the turnover. I mean, his presence at this stage, guys, is more of that of locker room veteran. It's interesting to hear you guys think or make an assessment on the BC pass rush. I thought it was god awful. I mean, the Riders have great protection and they have pretty much been okay, I guess, all year. You guys watch them closer than I, but I didn't think the pass rush at all. I mean, those guys. I mean, Jonathan Brown was just running around, was made to look like a senior citizen out there. So was Aaron Hunt. Caron Williams is the only guy doing anything, and, lo and behold, who shows up on the last play of the game and registers a sack is Brent Johnson. That's going to be a concern for BC going into their what may or may not be their last game.
Well, this has been one of the Achilles heels for Saskatchewan offensively, has been handling the blitz. And I guess it comes down to Darian Durant seeing it and doing what he needs to do to get rid of the ball or make a play so that he doesn't take a horrendous sack or lose the ball like we saw in this game. But our pass protection, I guess, I don't think has been great. We've complained about that. But especially it's our blitz pickups and just dealing with that, when they send six or seven guys and you've only got five or six in the block. So Saskatchewan has had real problems with that all year long.
They're not the only team, though, guys, that has that problem. I mean, it's been very much the case with the Lions, although I think they've done a much better job of blitz pickup. I mean, games against Saskatchewan from a BC perspective is basically line up an ambulance by the back door of the dressing room and which player is going to be led astray. Because, I mean, if you think back over the last three or four years, I have, just vivid memories of Dave Dickinson going down, Jackie Mitchell just, knocking the you-know-what out of him, Buck Pierce just being just tarred and feathered, literally. Jarius has gone down as well in games against Saskatchewan. But you know what? So if there's a measure of advancement on the part of the Lions, it's the fact that they, they recognize what was coming from Saskatchewan. And quite frankly, from that perspective, I don't know what you guys think, but I think that teams are starting to figure Gary Etcheverry out. At the start of the year, it just looked like a maze out there. But lately, I asked Travis about this before the game. I said, "Do you think you have a good read of it?" And of course, he gave me the stock answer. Well, of course I do. But you're looking in his eyes. He sort of got the feeling that the Lions had sort of figured that out. And from that aspect, that's probably as much of a concern, from a Saskatchewan perspective going into the playoffs, is, if teams can run on them and figure them out defensively, are they going to go deep into these playoffs?
I don't know. It's interesting that you mentioned Gary Etcheverry, and I don't know, Lowell, if you heard the news. There was a story here in the Leader Post in Regina, and Rob Vanstone, who writes for them and is their sports editor, he was on our show last week, and he actually broke down the game film last week and posted his own thoughts as to what the defense was doing and what the problems were. And we talked about scheme and formations that Etcheverry uses. And I think it was the next day, Vanstone went and talked to Etcheverry and talked to him about his formations and schemes, and pretty much said that if you haven't coached football, you don't know what's going on and you're not in a position to critique the defense. And I don't know what you guys think of that. For me, I think he does have a point to an extent. Obviously, we don't know what each player's particular assignment is on a given play. We don't know what they should be doing. We don't know technically who's messed up on the play. But, for me, the bottom line is the key here. When you can't stop the run and you know they're going to run, we gave up big yardage to the Argos a couple games ago. You know they're going to run and you can't stop it. That to me is the bottom line. And I don't care that I haven't coached football. When the ball gets run down your throat, you have a problem. And so what do you guys think of Echeverry making these comments that if you haven't coached, you're not really in a position to critique it?
For me personally, to some extent, yeah, but that's I've also never played football. I'm not very close. You know, I'm a fan of the stands. I see what's on TV. Yeah, I defer to Wally Bono all the time, but I don't know. I mean, Gerard, you've been a fan much longer than I have. And of course, Lowell, you're about 1,000 times closer to the game, if not more. You know, what do you guys think?
Well, I thought, I don't know. He's probably very defensive. There's not like, being defensive.
Well, yeah, he's obviously upset and doesn't like the criticism, right?
So, but I've played football. I've played 12 man, and I played a little bit of defense, and you have to read. You have to sort of make a read on as a cornerback or a linebacker. You've got to make that read, and you've got to respond to it. And I don't know. I see Ryder linebackers as they're not in position to even to contain. They can't. It seems like they're missing containment. They're being the play is going one way, and they're sweeping around on the other end, opposite side, and there's no linebackers there, and they're getting destroyed every time around the end.
Okay, but hang on. Getting back to my point, though, is this Echeverry lashing out at people because he can't take the criticism, saying you can't criticize us because you don't know what's going on? Like, isn't that kind of insulting to your intelligence? Like, or is this just me being oversensitive that I, you know, because I haven't coached, I can't see what's going on?
Well, let me throw my 2 cents in. First of all, I got 2 words for you, Corey Boyd. I mean, if you're going to run somebody down, I mean, I think that probably, you know, that's why the Riders had difficulty a couple of weeks ago against Toronto. I have a lot of time for Gary Echeverry. I've known him for a number of years. He used to coach for the Lions, lives in the Lower Mainland, or has. You know, but if he's, I don't know that he was necessarily being sensitive to the criticism. I think he basically was stating his version of facts, which is, you know, we don't know football as well as he does. That's true. And I think he was just responding to that. I don't think it's any sign of anything else. But I will say this. You know what? If he doesn't like the criticism, and maybe if that's the case, then we all shouldn't be talking on podcasts. We shouldn't be talking about the Riders. We shouldn't be talking about the CFL. We shouldn't have any newspapers out there, and we should just all show up to the game at 7:30 or 7 o'clock on Saturday night and see what happens. Because when they turn the lights on, let's see whether or not the coaches and the players find anybody in the stands, because no one will have any interest in any of this, because we won't have anything to talk about. That's how coaches see things. They want everything in complete and total secrecy, guys. They would love it to show up and not have any knowledge whatsoever of what's going on. That's kind of how they treat it in football. And you know what? It's not going to work that way.
Well, that's funny, because I have to laugh at the promotion where they have the fans design a play. I'm not sure whose promotion that was.
That's Nissan.
I have this notion that, you know, I can imagine the coaches saying, you want to do what?
I agree. I'm surprised that the coaches in this league, you know, who obviously would have had to have been consulted for that commercial, all agreed to it.
I know that this podcast isn't Orange Is the Color, but I'm going to take advantage of having a Alliance person on with us and ask you one more question about one player in particular. Did Tad Crawford play a better game?
He played a slightly better game. I know he's sort of been the lightning rod for a lot of criticism this year, and I suppose much of it is deserved. A lot of it gets compared, you know, unfavorably due to, you know, based on the fact that he's succeeding Baron Miles, a guy who played at an all-star level for a long time. That said, though, there were some plays where he came down in the box and basically stood there, and I'm not sure he even knew why he was there. It just kind of slayed me. But, you know, the Lions are forced into a situation through injury that they cannot any longer control this year with the elbow injury to Davis Sanchez. Next year, when they line up at training camp, Tad Crawford, should he re-sign with the Lions at all, would be in a backup capacity. David Hyland, I'm sure, that is the guy that they want to target and change the ratio and go to safety. But right now, Tad Crawford is who they have, and I've said to people in our business that if it gets down to a clutch play, whether it's this Saturday in Hamilton or in the playoffs, I would not be surprised if that's where the opposing team goes to strike if they need a score.
We should talk about special teams, even though us who are Rider fans do not want to discuss special teams yet again. We've been bemoaning the fact all year long. But if we were going to pin this loss on a particular phase of the game, well, we talked about Darian's turnovers, definitely hurt the team. But giving up another punt return touchdown when, you know, you only lose by 7 points or 6 points, pardon me, this was a big deal. And, you know, some Vancouver media joked, and it got out in Saskatchewan here, that Ryan Grice Mullen's nickname while in Vancouver was Ryan Grease Mullen, and he muffed another punt return, but luckily it was recovered. He muffed one last week. And special teams, I don't know what to do. We say this every week, and every week we get the same result. We have some major play go against us, and nothing ever changes. And I just throw up my hands in the air, and I just I don't know. I'm just going to pretend that they don't exist anymore because I can't take this every week. I don't know. What do you guys make of this? And Mr. Ulrich, do you see a particular weakness here? Is this noticeable to other teams? Do they know that we suck at special teams?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I guess you know, I can only live in the most recent past and look at the Davis touchdown return. And then also the one by Jason Armstead in Edmonton the previous week, and say that, well, there's something fundamentally wrong with the way that wall's set up and the way the coverage is. Beyond that, I don't know. I'm more interested to hear what you guys have to say, given the fact you've said it over and over, and maybe by this time have come to some conclusions. But it certainly has been an Achilles heel. Ryan Grace Mullen, if the returns are ever set up for him, he has unbelievable speed. Unfortunately, it requires a commitment to actually catch the ball before he uses the speed in the return to be set up for the speed to be used. That doesn't appear to be happening in Regina, and well, that's an interesting story too. I don't know how he got there. I know the Lions offered him a contract. He didn't like it, and Saskatchewan offered him something a little bit later, and I would be very interested to see whether he lasts in 2011.
Well, just to give you the Cliff's Notes version, our special teams has been terrible dating back to last year, where we didn't have a returner and we got Jason Armstead. Things were okay, although we had quite a few blocked punts last year. This year, pretty much since week one, we've been calling, some of us on this show have been calling for the head of Jim Daly. And last week, I gave up personally on the whole thing, and I said that I felt sorry for Jim Daly because I can picture the guy going over things again and again and again and yelling and screaming, and I don't think that the players are motivated at all. They don't react. They don't accept responsibility for what's going on, and there's some kind of major institutional problem with that particular unit, and it's not going away. It's not getting fixed.
Well, I don't know if it's fixable at this stage. Didn't Alex Smith do a better job, guys, than Jim Daly?
I would say so. We didn't have these problems 3-4 years ago.
No. Well, there's certainly been enough, it's how much attention is being placed on the special teams. And I'm not saying what you're saying is incorrect or inaccurate, but I mean, it goes right back to the Grey Cup. I don't want to throw, fuel on that fire, but obviously.
What fire? I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, I'll throw, and while I'm throwing, gas on the fire here, those of you who saw the game at Empire Field on Sunday, and this is not special teams, but it's defense, but, the Lions' offensive touchdown was scored with 11 Saskatchewan players on the field. What is going on here?
We're scared of the 13th man. We need 10 or 11 players on the field. We're still going to take, But no, we have not scored. We're the only team that has not scored on a punt or kickoff return yet this year. The only team.
Well, it's not an easy thing to do. I mean,
no, it's not.
Another thing is, just because they haven't doesn't mean that puts them, makes them inefficient. I think what you guys are saying is that, okay, yeah, it's one thing to not have a touchdown or a team's touchdown return, but it's quite a number. It's quite different to keep giving them up in consecutive weeks and down That's the stretch. Right. And when you saw the Armstead run, I mean, you could see clearly on television that there were, I think, three or maybe four riders that lined up, vertically in the same lane. I mean, and anybody's going to pick that apart. And golly, I must say, from you know my very good vantage point in the press box at, in Vancouver on Sunday, you could pretty much see that the wall was set up, and Davis only had to beat one guy, and that was the kicker, and that was and it was all over.
Pretty bad. It looked pretty bad anyway.
Let's not discuss this anymore. I need a change of topic. Let's get back to BC a little bit. Since you're here, Lowell, does Wally Buono stay the head coach of this team?
Good question. I think it's probably one we'll probably won't have too much time, much longer to find out the answer definitively. I don't think so. My gut tells me that he's seen the writing on the wall this year. There have been certainly enough people have asked him, and the guy's too smart to know how to bat those questions away. But being around the team pretty much every day, you do get the sense that he does understand. Part of me says that there's also a very stubborn side in him, and you know, from a writer perspective, I'm sure you can get that when you watch him and watch his act on the field. I know I got that when he was in Calgary all those years, and I think there's a stubborn side to him that sort of that speaks to the fact that I'm starting to reassemble this team, and it would be nice to put them on to be the coach of this team in 2011 when the team goes to the BC Play Stadium and the Grey Cup is being played there next year. But you know what? This is, they are right on the cliff here. They're on the edge of missing the playoffs, really for the second straight year. If you think back to what happened last year, they took a gift win from Hamilton over Winnipeg last year to get into the playoffs, and it's, going to require a similar scenario and a gift from the Riders this year. I kind of think that there are going to be some major changes with the Lions this winter.
Actually, the Riders are very good at giving gifts away.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people who, having seen that, watched that game on Empire Field on Sunday, had become instant Rider fans as soon as that game was over, and they were, of course, led by the players themselves, who many of whom have friends on the other side, and I remember talking to quite a bit of them. They said, "Oh yeah, we changed our tune as soon as the gun went off."
Well, if you know any good, if they have any good special teams people, have them send a resume to Mosaic Stadium, care of the Saskatchewan Roughriders. I found it interesting that you mentioned Dave Dickinson, because on this show we've talked about, I'm assuming, by the way, that they would be interested in him as an offensive coordinator. Keith and I have talked about the problems the Lions have had this year, and what we've talked about has been the offensive play calling. Does Chapdelaine stay? And that's interesting that, Dickinson would be a perfect candidate to take that over.
Yeah, he certainly would. I mean, that game on Sunday, my goodness, I don't know what you would call it. I've had some of the line coaches or players, yesterday say lethargic was a word that was brought and mentioned to me. I'm not sure that Jacques stays. I mean, obviously, the dominoes have to fall in a proper order. I have talked to Dave Dickinson about this topic. He did not bat me away and said, under no circumstances am I interested. But what he also said, in a candid way, which is quite like Dave Dickinson, he says, "I'm not ready to be a head coach." And when he says that, basically he's telling you that, I would be interested in offensive coordinator, but know this. The Calgary Stampeders will match or beat any offer that the Lions get, and they will have a chance to make that offer prior to the expiration of his contract. A lot of people, though, that said, really would like to see that happen because they think that Dave Dickinson sells in this marketplace, and really, right now, aside from hope, there's not a lot to sell here with Casey Printer's gone.
Well, we'll see what happens this offseason. It should be interesting. Let's talk about the state of the Lions. And actually, I had written up a bunch of questions, and then today, a story came out by the Canadian Press talking with David Braley. And it's interesting. A guy owns two teams, and suddenly he talks to the media a lot more than he ever has in the past. The state of the Lions, has this year being at Empire Fields, has that been the success the Lions have wanted?
Not at all. They thought when they announced just around Christmas that they would be forced into playing in a temporary facility, they thought that the mere fact that it would, the facility was going to be constructed on the grounds of where the last one was in East Vancouver, would be an instant magnet for fan attraction. And, you know, anybody over the age of 40 would instantly come to the games because of the fact that the games were played there all those years ago. Well, you know what? Winning is still what matters, and I guess in some way we can all say thank goodness for that. There was a certain nostalgic bent to the start of the season. You know what? Anybody, like I say, who, you know, had watched a game there in the past, and felt good about it. But the Lions' expectations of what was going to happen weren't matched by what they did on the field. And, yeah, they do now admit that there will be a slight loss or only a break-even at best. And that was inevitable, given the fact that they were going to have access to at least 5,000 fewer seats than they were selling on a regular basis last year in BC Play. So it's been a disappointment. There's no question about it.
Who paid for the $14 million construction cost? Did Braley shoulder some of that?
Are you kidding me?
I don't know the details. I guess not.
No, I'm being facetious. No, the good taxpayers of the province of British Columbia paid for that. That 14-4 was basically what happened, guys, is the fact that the BC Pavilion Corporation, which is the crown corporation that runs BC Place, had a lease that with the Lions that said, you know, we owe you a stadium, and they had to build them one when they decided to make when the provincial government kicked in all those gazillion millions to renovate the dome. So the Lions are operating under the last year of their existing lease. They have no lease. They have no technical place to play as of right now because they have no lease for 2011, but, you know, they fully expect to have one with, Pavco as it's known on BC. And, you know, that said, the story came out today that the operators of BC Place are saying that there will be games at Empire Field next year, though they will not give anybody a firm date. So, you know what, from a rider perspective, the schedule comes out in late February. If games are early in the season, there might be another trip in store to East Vancouver.
I'm not a construction guy by any means. So you'll forgive my ignorance, but if you're going to spend $500 million or whatever it is to put the new roof on BC Place, shouldn't they give you a completion date? I mean, they just say fall 2011. Shouldn't there be an expectation that there's something more specific so that you can plan, you know, your future, your season, and that sort of thing?
You know, that's a good way of asking the question, and I wish I had thought that today when I was standing face-to-face with the guy in charge with Pavco. I guess, obviously, they're trying to give themselves a lot of wiggle room. They do commit contractually with the contractor to say that the Grey Cup game will or is not in peril. They are promising a stadium for November 27th, 2011. And naturally, because it's a government, you know, funded project, they are going to want to make it, you know, well beyond any level of normality. In other words, it's going to be a gong show. It'll be over-the-top presentation with a lot of money thrown at the presentation itself. I guess the problem is the fact that, you know, they're, you know, really doing some what amounts to rather unique construction. So think about this. You know, they had an inflatable roof. They basically cut it open. Now they're putting a roof on it that is sort of supported by towers and cables that will allow it to sort of retract and draw up and down in a completely different manner. And on top of all that, they're putting a scoreboard in the middle of that roof design. That's pretty complicated stuff. And so they've gotten all of the infrastructure in play, but they haven't got, you know, they haven't put the main components, that being the operator, you know, loading up the scoreboard or mounting the scoreboard in the middle of a partially supported roof from the middle. I know it sounds hard to say, you know, verbally, but it sounds pretty complex, and I guess that's why they're giving themselves as much wiggle room as they can possibly get for a construction timeline. That said, Braley knows everything, and he just won't say. That's the truth.
In the Canadian Press story that I read today, Braley mentioned, to my surprise, that he has orange blood in him and he is not looking to sell the Lions, contrary to all the rumors we've heard all season long that he would be looking to move them. And instead, he said he'd rather sell the Argos in a few years once he gets that turned around. Is anybody surprised? Anybody else surprised by these comments? He's from Ontario. He's from Hamilton, so you'd think the Argos would make sense for him.
I don't know. Actually, sorry, I don't know a lot about David Brayley, so I'm not really in a position to say one way or the other.
Okay.
I'm glad, though. He's been a great owner. I think we've done well with him, you know, in terms of, the Bob Ackles years and the support he's brought to the team. So I think it's a good thing. But in terms of ties to the East, I don't know.
Well, I'd be interested. I'm going to look up the CP story because I was there when the CP reporter asked that question, and the answer that I got from Mr. Brayley as a result of the question that was posed didn't lead me to believe it was the Toronto Argonauts that he was willing to sell. I don't think he was really specific as to which team he would sell. He was basically sort of saying that neither team is up for sale right now. He does tend to change his mind from time to time. Sometimes they're for sale, sometimes they're not. But I mean, you know what? They can be not, and it's like any piece of property. It's not, you know, it's not for sale now, but if you want to give me a great offer, suddenly it's for sale at, you know, at the right price. So it's a little hard to sort of really sit here and say what's going to happen. Obviously, he's trying to bring some stability to the Toronto situation. A lot of people in Vancouver think that the team that he will eventually sell will be the BC Lions, but there have been names been floated up in national media, but frankly, you know, David says that none of them have actually spoken to him, and some of the people who have been linked to buying the team clearly don't have the money that he does, and they don't have the amount of money that it takes to run a CFL franchise on a regular basis, on an operating basis. So, you know what, I kind of think that it's an issue that's really not going to worth discussing, at least until after the 2011 Grey Cup.
Well, it would make sense that he would use the Lions, which I assume have been profitable the last few years, at least up until this year, to subsidize the Argos, right?
I think that's one way of looking at it. I don't think there's a – I think that the amount of profit that's been gleaned by BC even that last year wouldn't even come close to matching the losses in Toronto that occurred. But, you know, David is – you know, I'm sure people in Saskatchewan know. I mean, he is – really a foundation for this league. I mean, a lot of people kind of loathe them because it's, you know, too much power in the hands of one is too much power. But, you know, you have to ask yourself, and a lot of people in Vancouver do say, there would be no BC Lions were it not for him. And I have to think that people in Toronto who follow CFL have to think the same way. And, you know, it's really an indictment of the rest of the league that nobody stands up. I mean, the Toronto Argonauts were sale for anybody in the world, and nobody took them, and he did. So, you know, let's give the guy a little bit of credit, as much as we kind of cringe and say, oh, yeah, it's not exactly – it doesn't, you know, look too favorably on a league for one guy to own two teams. We all admit that.
He should actually open a – he should put a team in Moncton then, holding three teams.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if someone said, you know what, we want you to do this. He'd probably look at it if he thought he could make, you know, make a business case for it, but I don't think that that's going to happen anytime soon.
Well, I don't disagree with you. You know, if not for him, where would the league be? What would happen to Toronto? Do they fold? So I definitely don't disagree with you. The Vancouver Grey Cup Committee for 2011 released their ticket prices, and I think on your blog, Lowell, you talked about this. If my information is correct, ticket prices could be upwards of $325 for the most expensive ticket. That's, of course, if you're not a Lions season ticket holder. Is this a really expensive ticket? Are we? There seem to be some backlash against this already, at least online. You know, we're used to, I think, tickets being more expensive, but in a smaller venue. And you look at BC Place, and I'm not sure if it's still going to hold 60,000 or if it even holds that many. Wouldn't it make sense then in a bigger venue for ticket prices to actually go down? You know, it's Scott Ackles running things there with the Grey Cup committee. Do they need to charge this amount of money?
Well, I guess they feel they do. A couple things. I mean, the $375 price is one that, you know, it kind of sticks out there and you say, oh my God, that's nothing that you or I can afford, at least I can't. But they say that that's a bit of a misnomer given the fact that there are limited numbers at 375 and they're basically going to go to the high rollers anyways. I don't think you'll see a $375 ticket on the marketplace. They're basically saying that their tickets range for anybody, let's say in Saskatchewan, from $125 to $299. And to put some perspective on that, I didn't get all of that into the stories that I wrote today, but here are some of the prices for the last couple of years. And you can, if you listen closely, there's a direct contrast between size of stadium and and price. This year in Edmonton, for example, the price range is 98 to 250, and they are holding 60,000 seats. BC Place is going to be about 55,000 next year. 2009 in Calgary, 195 to 370 for a 46,000 seat stadium at McMahon reconfigured. 2008, Montreal, 84 to 240. 2007, which was in Toronto, oddly enough, 169 to 579.
Wow.
There's, so, you know,
wow.
When we say that the line prices are high, I think you have to, place some perspective on it. And that one is kind of goes against the, you know, our theory. But if you'll recall, there's a lot of discussion about that 2007 Grey Cup, which was in Toronto, and whether or not David Braley actually got the profits from that game in exchange for bailing out Howard Sokolowski and David Sinnemann, the previous owners. There's a lot of talk about that, if you'll recall, and one wonders whether or not the house that day was scaled in a different fashion. In Vancouver, when they last had it here, the price range was $90 for crappy seats right above the scoreboard where it used to sit on the east side, up to $225. And season ticket holders this year, or next year rather, are going to have an opportunity to buy the best price ticket at $239. So it's not that far off than from what they were. That's a lot of money to watch to any sporting event for me. But comparatively, I'm buying a little bit of what they're selling.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, from my memory of it was 2006, right? It doesn't seem that far off.
Yeah, and you know, like I say, the seat capacity is going down a little bit. So, you know, obviously they have to get X million in order to buy the game and cover the cost of the game. I kind of see that, just even look at this year versus this year versus next, the 250 top price at Commonwealth versus bottom price 98, and that's a big stadium. They're gonna be able to, you know, meet their needs and, you know, at least put it out to the public, which obviously responded rather favorably because they sold it out in, you know, in record time, because, you know, maybe because the prices were good.
My last couple of questions will relate to your blog. Just curious, we've had other media on the show, and I've asked them about their blogs and so on. And what was the impetus behind the Fifth Quarter blog? Was that your choosing? Was that your boss's their initiative? And I have to compliment you. I enjoy reading your blog, even though I'm not a Lions fan, but it's very informative. You have regular updates. And one thing I really like are your video blogs. I don't know what that says about me if I'm just – ADHD and I don't like to read. I'd rather listen to someone, you know, tell me information. But I do like that, and I think that it makes – I could understand that Lions fans, you know, flocking to your blog because of the interaction that you have with them. So what's behind your blog then? What was the motivation?
Well, first of all, thanks for the perspective and the compliment. I appreciate that. There's no science to this right now. The genesis is basically driven by the newspaper. They see us competing or trying to compete with the digital world. I'm sure people on your podcast know all about that. I'm sure they are. They're aware of the media landscape in this country changing. The people that just bought us out in the last couple of months are very, very top-heavy on wanting to do that. And from a video perspective, well, you know, sometimes you just get tired of typing. I just thought maybe another way to do it would, you know, just be, you know, you can get it done in a lot quicker fashion. Last year we did podcasts like this, and we put them up, and I'm not sure where we're going with it. I know it's going to change. You know, we're going to change stuff up again for next year in all likelihood. But, you know, I think like everybody else, we're all just kind of trying to feel our way through and understand, you know, what's the best way to service the public. How can our employer, you know, make a dollar or two off of this so, you know, my salary can be paid and their costs can be covered too. But that said, you know, knowing that you've had other guys on from our chain, they will tell you that there are no rules associated with this, and we're all kind of feeling our way through.
Do you personally enjoy that? Like, do you feel a sense that you need to, you know, regularly update it? Like running our blog, you know, it's really difficult for us to update it, you know, even two or three times a week. And so do you enjoy doing that? Do you feel pressure? Do you enjoy the video stuff? I mean, you mentioned you don't like, it gives you a break from the typing, but what's your personal feeling about all that?
Well, I sort of think that once a day during the season is fair. I mean, you know, you can't get everything you need to, you want to get in the paper. And so, you know, you have this sort of avenue, you know, you kind of cut, you know, some of the news, you know, you sort of put it aside and say, well, you know what, that might sit good there. It can be light, it can be informative, it's not meant to be rocket science. You know, I probably should be a little bit more irreverent with it, quite frankly, but I think that people come there because, you know, they want to get a sense of what's going on with the team, and, you know, I think that's kind of the way I've decided to go. I'm trying to merge that with Twitter. That's another thing we've had to do and manage that. I'm sure people who listen to this podcast can relate to that and how we're supposed to sort of amalgamate that. We've taken the position that putting news on Twitter is dumb because it basically just alerts it to the competition. So we try to sort of put links from Twitter on to, you know, towards the blog, so that people can, you know, get information and we can count a click and an eyeball to the advertisement that is there. So, you know, it's a complex thought process. I would like to see your paper, you know, charge for it, but that's a topic for another day. But I'm not going to win that one, and everybody expects everything to be free. And, you know, because of that, it's difficult to sort of say where this is all going.
Well, thank you very much, Lowell, for your time. It's been great to meet and to spend the time chatting with you and getting to know your perspective out in Vancouver. So thank you again for coming on.
My pleasure. And you know what? A lot of people are saying go Riders this week.
A lot of people a lot of people are depressed this week as well. Anyhow.
They shouldn't be. This is still a good football team. It's not, if you want depression, you should have called a couple of months ago when the football team that we were watching, had lost seven in a row. And, you want perspective. I can give you perspective too.
All right. Well, we'll believe you on that. Thanks again. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue discussing the games of week 18. Well, let's finish discussing the games of Week 18, and we're going to have to do this quick because we didn't mean to take up so much time with Mr. Ulrich. So thanks again to him for chatting with us for so long. The other games of Week 18, we saw the Stampeders annihilate the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Do we see now the true Stampeders?
Well, and it was a meaningless game, and they still annihilated them.
Yeah, but Hamilton, if I understand correctly, I didn't see this game, but Hamilton, it was meaningless to them as well. Isn't this the week that they took a little break as well?
That could be. I don't know how long Kevin Glenn played. I know that Burris came out in the second half and Tate came in, so.
Yeah.
But I mean. Hey, here's an interesting thing. Lumsden scores his first TD.
Yay.
So,
yeah, until someone hits him in the shoulder or in the shoulder and then he's done.
I think he got hit, but he was okay, so.
Yay.
That's nice. So,
but my point is, Francis, this is about the Riders. I mean, Riders played a meaningless game, too, and they still lose. And
yeah.
So, I mean, and the Stampeders can do it, and they still manage to have a good performance. So,
if Hamilton did rest, and I don't know if they did or not, like as I say, I didn't see the game, and I don't think any team ever officially announces that we're taking this one easy. If they did, I think that was really smart. Rest in week 18 and then take week 19 a little bit more seriously and, you know, get some momentum going in. I think that's a really intelligent way to play it. But I don't know how much they are able to rest because, or they would have been because the Montreal-Toronto game, if I understand correctly, if Toronto had won that, then there was an off chance that Toronto could get the home game, right?
Yes, I think there was.
Yeah, so I think statistically that I don't know when they had to declare their roster, like how far in advance they have to declare their roster, or if they can watch the outcome of that game to make that determination. So I don't know. Interesting stuff. Montreal-Toronto, did you guys see that one?
I saw the last couple minutes, and you know, we talked about the opening game of the season where it went to double overtime. How about that game for an ending? Which, if you didn't see it, Montreal was kicking – were they kicking a field goal? And it went into the end zone. Toronto punted it out. It went right back to the kicker, Damon Duval, who kicked it right back into the end zone. And somebody – one of the players tried to kick it. I think it was Grant Shaw actually tried to kick it. And it didn't clear the end zone. Montreal fell on it for a touchdown. And this is on the last play of the game.
You know, it was funny. I was talking to the guy that I normally go to the games with, and he gave the similar or, well, same recount that you just gave because he'd seen it. And this is the play that he lives for. He talks about this play all the time, punting in and out of the end zone. He was annoyed that the Americans seemed to know what to do. He was hoping.
Thank God. That means somebody actually told them for a change.
Exactly. But this is the thing, is he was hoping that he looks forward to the Americans on the field just looking dumbfounded and not knowing what's going on, right? Because it's a very particular Canadian rule, kicking the single through, right? But apparently, Americans, for the two teams, you handled yourself with composure and aplomb. So good on you.
How disappointed are you, though, if you're an Argos fan, that all you have to do is kick the ball out of your end zone and you win the game, and they can't even do that? And not only that, but then Montreal pounces on it for a touchdown. Like, how – like, that's just got to kill morale in Toronto, and it's got to make fans never want to come back because the game was in hand and they blew it.
Well, it must feel kind of like if you're a Winnipeg fan and your team has two meaningless games left and they just come out and look like a bunch of losers.
You must be referring to the 16-13 loss to Edmonton.
Did you like that segue?
I did, yeah. Very, very thoughtful.
Thank you very
brutal,
much.
Brutal.
That one
game.
I did watch. I watched the whole game.
Sick bastard.
Yeah, I know. Edmonton's my – I'm sorry, Saskatchewan fans, but Edmonton's my second team. Edmonton, Zabransky did not look brilliant, but like we talked about, those quarterbacks need time to develop, and a win is still a win. What is Richie Hall – are the Eskimos 5 out of the last 6? Is that where they're at now?
I think so, yep.
Yay.
They're 5-2 now in their
something
last
like,
7 games?
Something like that. They're doing – you know, they're not doing too badly, all considered.
You got a rookie quarterback playing another rookie who, mind you, was a fourth string quarterback in Winnipeg, Joey Elliott. You know.
Yeah, but arguably one of the strongest runners in the league in Fred Reed, right? I mean, it's not like he wasn't in there with support.
And a decent defense, too. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So.
But boring game. Holy smokes.
Well,
end the misery already. Let
the
season
good guys
over.
Won, so, you know.
Yeah, the good guys won, whatever. They better lose next week.
Well, it would be good for my team if they did, but my team needs to win first. So,
see what
does
we
that
can
mean
do.
That we're on to the picks of the week?
Yes, it is.
Yay!
When Girard picks a long shot to win, Francis's reaction might seem unkind. But when Girard makes his picks of the week, you know Girard. He blows my mind.
My mind.
Okay, Gerard, here we go. Last week, you blew it, man. You picked Edmonton over Winnipeg. That was the one game that you picked, I think to spite Francis from what I listened to on the podcast. The other three, no dice. So you are now down to 45%. If you are perfect this week, you can get 49%, which means that you'll be slightly less efficient than the quarter that I keep in my pocket. I'm sorry to report.
That's okay.
But it doesn't make it any less fun. Calgary at Winnipeg. That's the first game of the week.
Oh, Calgary.
Okay. BC at Hamilton.
BC.
Yeah? You think they're going to turn it around?
No. Unless they start Quentin Porter, Hamilton's winning that one. But keep going.
So Edmonton then at Saskatchewan. If BC has won, this is a very meaningful game for Edmonton. What happens for Edmonton at Saskatchewan?
Saskatchewan. I have to go with Saskatchewan. I can't.
They turn it around?
They turn it around.
Edmonton's got everything to play for. Saskatchewan has nothing to play for other than their pride.
Well, they
and,
need to,
and to end
they
the
have
losing
to,
streak.
They have to win because otherwise they're done.
Now, the only meaningless game next week, and the reason I say that it's the only meaningless game is because Winnipeg desperately needs to do something. Toronto at Montreal.
I think Toronto can win that, actually.
Oh, please.
Well, they almost did the last time. Jeez.
There you go. Those are the picks of the week.
We're so lonely. Drop us a line. We'll read it on the podcast. It's listener email time.
We have a couple of emails this week for our The Moment You Knew You Were a Rider Fan Looney Contest. This one is from Mike from Saltcote, Saskatchewan. Hi, guys. Love the podcast. I'm a longtime listener but first-time rider. I've been watching the Riders for about 25 years now. Unlike the rest of you, my parents were not big football fans, but I had a group of high school friends I would get together with and watch games. For me, it was the frustration of the Danny Barrett era. That's pretty interesting. We could tell the team had enough talent to win, but they could never seem to get over the hump. They would tantalize you with a blowout victory one week and then stink it up the next. Sound familiar? I liked Barrett, and I wanted to see him win, but he just didn't seem to get the best out of his players. What a change when Kent Austin took over. Anyhow, I've rambled on long enough, so on and so forth. I can use another rider, Looney. Keith, you want to take the next one?
Yeah, this one comes from Sandy in Calgary. I'm writing to answer your rider fan contest. I knew I was a rider fan after the 89 Grey Cup. My parents would have people over to our house every year to watch the Grey Cup. 89 was extra exciting because the riders happened to be in the game. I vividly remember people jumping out of their chairs, hooting, hollering, spilling drinks. Oh no, Sandy, that's terrible, etc. One minute the room would be elated, the next minute they'd be down. At the end, it was just a feeling of unbridled joy. It was the best experience I've ever had watching a sporting event and have watched the riders ever since. I always feel a little rush when they win, and it is still a topic of conversation with my parents. My dad has been a rider fan for over 50 years. So you got some work to do, Gerard, to catch up there. That's cool. Thanks very much, Sandy, for your comments and for sharing that. That's really interesting.
So if you'd like to share your stories of when you knew you were a rider fan, you can do so podcast@greenisthecolor.ca. Color is the British spelling, C-O-L-O-U-R. So share that with us, and we'll be sending out some rider loonies for those. I don't know how we're going to pick a winner, but we'll be mailing some out. So anyhow, send in.
We probably should have talked about that before.
Yeah, that would have been – that's thinking.
It'll be decided fairly, however.
Somehow we're going to have an octopus, and the octopus is going to decide which ones win. No,
don't, Gerard. We're not using the octopus for picks of the week. You're okay.
Thank God.
You're safe for now. For now.
Hey, can I just before we finish up, because I know we're wrapping up real quick, I just want to say a couple things about this week's game at Empire Field that I didn't get a chance when we were talking with Lowell. Just really quick, it was a really good way to end the season at Empire Field. And I'm not trying to rub salt on the wounds for anybody in Saskatchewan, no. But it was nice that this game, more than any I've seen, it was interesting. The fans were into the game. There were no streakers on the field because the fans were into the game. And, you know, absolutely cheering at the right moments and stomping up and down and shaking those stands and making some noise. It is rare for us to just totally drown out the rider fans who were in attendance. And I got to tell you that being Halloween, there were a lot of people there dressed up as weed enthusiasts. So that was, you know, that's always fun to see. But it was good. Really good experience for the end of the year at Empire Field. Still not thrilled with the venue 100%, but nice way to wrap it up. So given 2 weeks ago my rant, I just wanted to add that and hopefully make amends.
Oh, everything is better now. That's going to do it for us this week. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and we would appreciate it if you could rate our show, leave us a review. It helps us become more visible. We can move up the rankings. Recommend us to a friend. You can also join our Facebook group. You can follow us on Twitter. We'll have the links on the blog, greenisthecolor.ca. And you can send us comments, questions, entries in the Looney Contest podcast@greenisthecolor.ca. And with that, guys, one more week to go in the regular season. Can you believe it? It's one more week left.
Hard to believe. Sure went fast.
So we'll talk to everyone next week.